ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Medialand, your weekly look at what's happening behind the scenes and on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly.
This week, radio's killing season is upon us.
Teens and tech companies plan for a world with age-based social media restrictions.
And as podcasting pivots hard towards video, our audience is following. So, Viv, let's start with Instagram. It's going family-friendly.
Allegedly. So, Instagram's parent company, Meta, has announced a range of changes to teen accounts in Australia, the US, the UK, and Canada, including restricting them in line with what we would classify as a PG-13 movie rating.
Which, if I remember rightly, stood for parental guidance. And while regulators prepare themselves for the social media youth ban, which is coming into effect in Australia in December, which sounds like a long time away, but it's actually only about 7 weeks, teens and tech companies are getting ready too.
Yeah, my algorithm has been serving me up a bunch of videos of teenagers almost like doomsday prepping for, you know, here's what we can do when the moment comes in December. I have no idea why I'm being targeted with that content. Firstly, it's been a very long time since I was under 16. And secondly, I have no interest in their doomsday prepping. And I would have thought that the social media companies would want to hide or suppress that content, and yet they're amplifying it to me.
One thing to be clear about is that we still don't officially know the final list of which social media platforms are or are not going to be covered in all of this.
Yeah, I've seen headlines about Roblox and the idea that it's going to be tricky to include them.
And I must admit, I don't know much about it. I thought it was pronounced Roblox, but I might even be wrong about that.
Well, look, I've probably just shown my age and why I should not be targeted with social media banned content from teenagers, because clearly I am not in the loop, Tim, and you are.
Well, that's if I'm correct, which we can never actually say for certainty. But you know, there are other things. There's, you know, Roblox, Wikipedia is another question mark. Small-ish services like Snapchat, for instance.
We're not calling Snapchat small, Tim. Come on.
In Australia, certainly compared to the, certainly in terms of, and I guess this is the thing, is do you look at it through the revenue they write or the audiences they reach? And, you know, Snapchat, certainly you would think in Australia would reach quite a big audience. But of course, a lot of the legislation that gets written around this is about the size of revenue they make as well.
And I think the social media companies are still not on board with this idea. You know, YouTube has outlined three grounds on which it could legally challenge its inclusion in the under 16s social media ban. So we're at the point where it's a matter of weeks away, as you mentioned, Tim, but legal cases could still be unfolding. I imagine there is a lot of lobbying happening behind the scenes. So I just don't know what's going to happen when the axe falls on this date in December and these gigantic international companies are not actually on board with it.
I think we shouldn't be ruling out further legal action. The other thing I think we probably shouldn't rule out is the fact that Australia is creating some sort of global lead. You know, I would be certain that it's not a coincidence that Instagram are announcing all of these changes right now globally, because of course what they want to do is avoid any similar laws in any other kind of jurisdiction. So if they're able to say, well, we've already done it, you know, we've already made the changes, you don't need to change the law, then it does feel like Australia is actually kind of creating some precedents.
Yeah, I feel like if we successfully implement it, it will be easier for other countries to follow suit. So you could almost say that these companies have a vested interest in us not successfully implementing it, lest it spread all over the world.
Isn't it nice being a Petri dish?
So, Tim, do you think video has killed the podcasting star?
Well, maybe not yet, but it's certainly trying to make friends with the podcasting star. So it was a big week for, I don't know if we'll call it vodcasting news, I suppose we will, with Netflix and Spotify announcing a content sharing deal that will put podcasts right there on Netflix's platform. So the idea being that, you know, when you're watching your movies, your TV shows, you might be able to watch your favourite podcast as well.
Yeah, it's definitely become a huge market in social media where you see clips of podcasting people and their interview guests clipped up and put on socials. And that might just be 30 seconds from a 30-minute podcast. But we're also seeing a shift where it's not just that. It's the entire thing cut together from different camera angles. I was speaking to someone the other day who makes a podcast, and they were saying they actually get it edited by AI. And for a 1 hour podcast with three cameras, they put it into whatever program it is, and in 90 seconds, they have the 1 hour supercut of their podcast. So, firstly, I mean, that's a video editor's job gone already, but it is so much easier for these podcasting people to do. What we're sort of seeing now is whether or not there's the audience appetite to sit down and watch people talk on mic.
This is the question, is what's driving this? Because I think some of the attraction for podcasters is ever harder to tune into algorithms and actually find an audience. And there is a perception that YouTube is one of the last platforms that's quite generous with the algorithm in finding new audiences. So that's probably why the podcasters are leaning towards it. But the question for me is, are the audience only listening, or are they half watching, half listening? You know, what actually is the experience when it's, you know, it's two people or more sitting around a table chatting for an hour?
The other really interesting thing is what impact it has on content. So Michelle Andrews and Zara McDonald, who host the really successful Shameless podcast, have been quite open about how the shift to video has messed with their heads a little bit. They feel like they need to look more TV ready rather than just microphone ready, and it affects how they present themselves. They've become self-conscious about snort laughing or what they're doing with their hands or when they touch their hair. And I also hosted a session at South by Southwest Sydney earlier this week, and I was speaking to Osman Faruqi, who co-hosts the Lamestream podcast. He is so against video podcasting, and yet I said, I keep seeing your face pop up in my social media feed. So it's obviously not a hill you're willing to die on. But he said he thinks he makes worse content now that they're filming, because he feels like when his co-host Scott Mitchell is talking, should he be looking down the barrel of the camera? Should he be looking at his co-host? He wants to look at his notes, but then the video will be bad because his eyes will be flicking everywhere. So instead of being in the moment talking about the content, he's worried about the video.
Yeah, do you know what? And the funny thing is, I suppose it's something we almost saw radio presenters go through that in recent years, the moment when they were creating so much social media content, they suddenly had to, even if they were doing the breakfast show and getting out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, they were having to get dressed up, look smartish, look presentable, which as someone who podcasts for audio at the moment is not generally seen as the most stylish person in the room, I'm feeling quite challenged.
Yeah, it is strange because we had really slick productions in television and on social media, and then we had podcasting, and part of its alleged appeal was, you know, you don't need to be perfect. Audiences will accept if it sounds a bit different and a bit off the cuff. And now we've moved to, it's almost a television production in and of itself again. And a lot of the appeal of podcasting, giving voices to people who might not be television people, is kind of unwinding, and I feel like everything's the same again.
Well, we have been talking about video killing the podcasting star, but certainly what it has done is kill that old joke about having a face for radio. You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly.
It's October, and that means radio's killing season is underway.
As upfronts and showcases kick into gear, we get an idea of what we'll be watching and listening to next year. But for hosts and people we refer to as talent, it can be a precarious time, Tim.
It is Viv. Mitch Cherry knows that all too well. Late last year, Kiss FM told him that he would not be returning to The Night Show with Mitch Cherry or The Pickup, which he co-hosted.
So, Mitch, you've got two radio shows. People were billing you as the next Kyle Sanderlands, although perhaps with fewer controversies to your name.
So far.
And then you're pulled into a meeting. Is that how Killing Season unfolds? Like, what happened? Did you know it was coming?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. I know I'm a commercial boy, sorry, because I want to play the Jaws bed underneath the discussion of the Killing Season, or Psycho, Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, the knife stabbing. That's where my mind goes when we discuss these topics.
Sadly, the ABC can't afford the rights.
Yeah, right, damn it. Okay, I don't think ARN could too, to be honest with you, at this point. Yeah, look, it was that classic story. You think you're flying high, ratings are good, whether or not that matters. But yeah, pulled into a boardroom. A meeting was put into my calendar for a content catch-up with my entire team. So executive producer, assistant producer, audio producer, digital producer, which was a little bizarre, especially doing the night show. I wouldn't get in till later in the day. So it was earlier. So I thought that was a red flag. And all the team walked to this boardroom. And as we were walking there, one by one, they were tapped on the shoulder and said, "No, this isn't for you." And then it was the next, "No, this isn't for you. This is just for Mitch." And I thought, what is going on? And I had been, we'd been recording the last like 10 minutes of the show because we were finishing so late. And I also did Drive. So I was doing two shows a day. I was exhausted. So I thought, shit, they've caught us on the cameras and they know that we're leaving 15 minutes early. Far worse than that. I was told we are done. We are done. And look, very transparently, it's financial. They have a big brekkie show to pay for. And I was one of, I think you guys would know better than me, but almost 240, 250 redundancies.
Yeah, and big sort of savings by both of the big radio networks, ARN, who owned and own Kiss, yeah. Something Cross House Stereo, been doing their own rounds as well. What might not be clear to kind of people outside of radio is why it all happens at this time of the year.
Well, it's purely contracts, right? And in commercial radio, I think it's changing. I really do. But you get your talent, like you say, Vivian, on these end-dated contracts that go for a year, 2 years, 3 years, however long, right? And the Killing Season, it's real. It's something that a lot of commercial presenters live and die by. It's like when you're, a good way to explain it for those not in the industry, it's like when you go out drinking and you know that you'll have a hangover the next morning, right? But it doesn't stop you from enjoying the night. You go out, you party, you go hard, you push, you enjoy it, but it's looming. You go, what's coming? And then as the night gets later and later, you go, it's closer. And then it inevitably will happen the next day. But the Killing Season, it's part and parcel of commercial radio.
So is everyone nervous at this time of year? Is there a vibe in the buildings that this could be it, or do you sort of become immune to it until you're pulled into that meeting?
It's funny. I was with Miff Warhurst, ABC legend, yesterday, and we were at South by Southwest in Sydney, and we were talking about it, and she said, "Come back to me when you've had your fifth or your sixth or your seventh." She's like, "It's happened to me so many times, and it guts you at first, but you do get used to it." For me, it was a shock and it was a surprise. But now, as I learn, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, this media career. I don't think there are whispers in the halls at a radio station. I mean, you guys know what it's like. There are whispers, and it's almost like everyone knows the ins and outs of every presenter's contract, which is so funny. Whispers start always around July, August. And if you're not firmed up by August, September, then you know you're worried.
But we're in trouble, Tim.
Oh, no. You re-signed. Yes, what
signs should we look out for?
Yeah. I don't know, guys. Uh-oh.
So it's content meeting in the calendar is the one to look out for, is it?
That's
okay,
right.
Fair enough. Now, I think one of the things about being in radio is because you have to put so much of your personality into the show anyway, you must derive quite a lot of your self-worth from being on air. So it must be a shock when suddenly you're not.
Oh, it is. It is. It requires so much of you to put on a daily show and a content show on a commercial radio station like Kiss. When it is your live, often you're talking to a younger audience, so you're talking about relationship. It is so deeply personal and it requires that of you. And in my instance, I was doing the Drive show, the Pickup, 3 to 4, and then I was doing nights live every night. So I was making 4 hours of radio a day, 5 days a week. It was constant. And it almost felt like doing those two shows, like I was conducting a train, I was driving the train, but I was also putting the tracks down at the same time. Like I could never catch my breath or catch my tail. And then it was that whiplash of being pulled and cut and they're all stopping after 10 years that that really, really throws you. Like you think you are that show, you think you are the brand, right, of the radio station. So it took me a few months to untie myself and remove that tether. But interestingly enough, it is really only me who ever felt that way. You know, that's what I've learned in this whole process, that it's you can really fall victim to being so inside that network and those walls. But in reality, the audience come in, they catch you for a moment, it's fleeting. They don't look at you as that brand. You know, it's just yourself who has to get rid of that attachment.
You spoke about connecting with a younger audience. I get the sense at the moment, though, that a lot of hosts in commercial radio are getting older and we're not, I mean, everybody's getting older, but we're not replacing them with younger talent. And you were one of the younger ones, always billed as, you know, the next big thing, the next Kyle or whatever it may be. Now we don't have that. So how can we be appealing to the TikTok generation when the hosts are 55?
It's hard. It's hard. I don't think they have a plan. I really don't. And that's the sad thing about this. I think
this is commercial radio.
Commercial radio,
generally.
Correct. Yes, yes, in general. I don't think there is a plan. But I also don't think that will work on commercial radio. If you look at what Back to ARN did, I know because I was in the walls when they launched Cater, which was their youth offering. They brought in influencers, social media stars, these really big names in the youth world, Gen Z and you know, Zillennial world. And it didn't translate. It didn't work. So I think the radio, people always ask, well, is radio dying? Yes. I don't think it will die. I think it will just consolidate and it will just get smaller. But I think they need to keep the audiences they have. I really do not think it's going to work trying to attract these younger audiences. I don't think that's the play.
And so what are you doing now, Mitch? You sort of lost the dream job. It would have felt quite public. And then you wake up the next day and you go, oh, I don't have a job anymore.
Yeah, it was tough. The redundancy helped. That was nice. You know, I lived off that for a bit. But I tried for so long. I jumped on to the Nova network, Nova Entertainment, and I did a bunch of shows at Nova, which was great. But the shows that I was watching were YouTube shows. I'm a big YouTube boy. You know, I'm big on TikTok. I watch streamers. I listen to podcasts all the time. I love your podcast. My day is filled with podcasts and online shows. So I thought rather than try and create a show to get back into radio that I've done for 10 years, I'll make a show that I feel can future-proof myself. So I've created the Mitch Turi Chat Show. So it's a podcast. It's a video podcast. Kind of hate that word, vodcast. Feels so ugly, doesn't it?
Yeah, the blending of words is not great.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. You know, in America, at South by Southwest this week, I was at in Sydney, they were saying that in America, vodcast doesn't exist. It's not a term. Podcast actually doesn't even exist now. It's just show. They just refer to it as a show. Isn't that crazy that it's blending, that TV is podcasting and podcasting is radio? It's just all becoming the show.
So how does that change what you do then when you're aware that there are cameras that at least some of your audience are going to be watching as well as listening?
Yeah, well, I'm one of those people that loves the attention. So unfortunately, it's, you know, I know where my cameras are at all times. I enjoy it. I like it. I think it only adds an extra element to the content. I mean, more often than not, when I was on the radio, I'd go live on TikTok or social media and all the comments were, this is so fun to see it live, because it adds that extra element, you know. It's just being able to, a moment can land so much, it can be so much funnier if you're seeing the visuals attached to a moment. I just think it's another offering, you know. At the end of the day, I'm focusing on the audio numbers and the people that are listening to the Mitch Turi Chat Show, but also we've got the option to watch it on TikTok in clips, or you can watch it in full like it's a chat show. So the show is, I love late night talk shows. I don't know if you guys are obsessed with, I love late night.
There's been a lot to say about late night television recently.
There has, and it's almost like a good time to launch a late night show, I guess. But, you know, they're such an important part of American culture. But here we had Rove and now we've got Sam Pang, and that's a very different style of show. I really love the format. So this is my take on a late night show for the 21st century. And I do sit behind a chat show desk and we do get big names, celebs in, but then we can also get those niche guests that I love, that the internet loves, that are really resonating. And I'm having so much fun having full control. It's so different to radio. I don't have to have a brand's guidelines at the top of mind. It can be the show that I want to create, and I'm really enjoying seeing how that is resonating with audiences.
What sort of things are in brand guidelines then? What kind of things are you restricted to or can't talk about?
Well, it's a tone. And the feedback I always used to get, and you're right, Vivian, it was very much, I would fill in for Kyle and Jackie O on their brekkie show. I did winter breakfast, summer breakfast with Mitch Turi, Easter breakfast when they would go on survey break. And at ARN especially, it was funny. It was, you know, we don't let many, that they would run best ofs, right? Just replays of the shows. And they wouldn't let many people fill in for Kyle and Jackie O. But I almost got the, you know, the kiss that you can do it.
You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National with Tim Burrows and me, Vivian Kelly. We're speaking to Mitch Turi, a former KISS FM host who so far has described himself as a YouTube boy and now a brand boy. Are there any other categories you'd like to place yourself into, Mitch?
I mean, if we both want to take a stab at handsome, your good head of hair, youthful, I'll take youthful. I recently turned 30, so I'm trying. That's my current issue that I'm grappling with. You know, I used to identify as a Gen Z because I'm born in 95 and that's the cutoff year. So now I'm happy being a millennial. But for a long time I would clutch onto Gen Z. So I'm also a millennial now, Vivian. There you go.
Well, do you think you're done now with working for big media companies? I mean, it sounds like you were a bit bruised from... Yeah. I know they let you say goodbye to the listeners, yeah, but it feels like you were a bit bruised from the ARN.
Oh, well, you know what? Process. I had a great run there, 10 years, and they let me say goodbye. I had 3 weeks on air. They could have pulled me instantly.
And they often do.
Yes.
Like you must... It's almost a test of the standing somebody is in with a network, isn't it? If they actually get to say goodbye or not.
Yeah. The truth is there is no bad blood. I still speak to many of the content heads. I understand why they made the decision. You know, ask me 6 months ago and I probably would have been a little more upset by it. But I get it. Like, they're in a really tricky situation. That the company and commercial radio as a whole is struggling. I don't think it was the right decision, but I can see why they made it. There is a lot of money still to be made in commercial radio. Yeah, so the money can be eye-watering. Yeah.
Well, we know that based on Kyle and Jackie's salary that has been so public for so long and is often cited as the reason that people such as yourself are being ousted just because it is such a big number.
I remember it's 200 million over 10 years.
Do you think there is frustration from people within these commercial radio networks who are seeing their friends get axed, seeing people being made redundant? Is there a resentment to Kyle and Jackie O, even if not in person, just sort of the theory and the idea of them sucking up all that money?
Well, it's like, when does the bubble pop? Because like, it's commercial radio. We're all capitalists. If you're working in that building, it's good. You go, look at these. Kyle's a radio presenter from Brisbane. So is Jackie. Like, oh, wow, look at them grow. Look at them rise. Look at this success. It has to get to a level of oh, that can the industry sustain that? I think it's more of a question for the industry rather than that show. And I think we're seeing that the industry can't support that.
The effect for listeners, you know, they get to the end of the year and suddenly the people they're used to listening to go away. I think, you know, I'll be listening to a presenter and I'll get used to them. I'll build my habits over the years and suddenly they're not there anymore.
Yes.
That would change how I feel about the radio station, I think.
Yes, I completely agree. And I get so many messages still of people, especially Nights Radio. Nights Radio, Breakfast Radio, Drive, it's habitual listening, right? It's listeners that are baked in, that are there because they have a commute that puts them in the car at that time of night, or they're off to uni. I had so many, and I still do get so many uni students that would message me and say, you got me through my HSE, because I would just turn on the night show while I was studying and I'd listen to you. I think that is actually a very good point that content directors and bosses of all the radio networks, that they let slide. They don't think about enough the listener. I don't think the listener really gets thought of much when any of these decisions are being made, you know?
So how do you show up and continue to do your show when you either think you might be axed, or in your case, Mitch, you were told you were axed and then you still had to come on and perform for the audience?
Well, you do it for the audience, right? Like I started at 19 and I left at 29. I was a kid and I had all my formative moments of my life played out in front of this audience. It was nice. It was a nice final goodbye. I enjoyed it. I love to perform. I love to present. I love live radio. So for me, it was actually quite enjoyable. Yes, it was hard to walk back in the building and have the staff and the team and, you know, look at you, and it's like a death walk. You know, they know what has happened. But they were like family. There were only, it's funny, I started just after the KISS rebrand, and there were only three other staff members that had been there as long as I had, who had seen the change. So I knew everyone in that building.
Well, speaking of final goodbyes,
oh,
that
not
is where we have to leave it. Mitch Cherry is the host of the Mitch Cherry Chat Show, the video podcast where you can find in all the usual places. Mitch, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, guys. Why is there a HR person? Is that for me or for you two?
Now, as well as killing season, it is also still media upfronts season. Tim, did anything jump out at you from the 9 upfronts on Wednesday this week?
And the funny thing is, it does feel like we've been going on about upfront season for weeks, if not months now. Yet this week was the first of the TV companies. It was 9, as you say. I think the first thing that just struck me was there was very little new stuff. We've talked about how much we're struggling to see Australian drama commissioned, and there was basically no new dramas announced from 9, which was a first. So the one that stood out for me most was a show, and I think there is a rule that says a show with an exclamation mark at the end is generally not great, but the show is called Shark. And it involves celebrities, 9 aligned celebrities. So far, I think they've announced 2, Scott Cam from The Block, Ariana Titmus, who retired as a swimmer this week. And it's presented by the diver Paul De Gelder. And all we know is that they're going off to, I believe it's the Bahamas, and they're going to be swimming with a shark or sharks. Now, you're a diver. How do you feel about this?
Oh, Tim, this show makes me so nervous for so many reasons. The only thing that gives me a little bit of hope is that Paul, the host, is a shark attack survivor, and often shark attack survivors are actually quite pro-shark and pro-conservation and educating people about the fact that they aren't just mindless killing machines. But the fact that this show, as you say, Tim, has an exclamation mark, I've read that it is going to be about quote unquote, increasingly dangerous challenges. Now, firstly, there's no way that Channel 9 is going to let Scott Cam get eaten alive on camera.
Not until they have the next series of The Block in the bag anyway.
They're not even going to let him have his little toenail bitten off. But in order for the show to be exciting, it is going to have to play off people's fears about sharks. So it might not be as bad for shark populations as Jaws, the film, ended up being. It might have an undertone of conservation and messaging about sharks not being the monsters we think or thought they were. To make it interesting, though, they're going to have dramatic music. They're going to have panicked celebrities. They're going to entice the sharks to do things that to the untrained eye look dangerous or scary. And I just can't see how overall it's going to paint an accurate picture of what happens underwater, which is sharks really don't give a crap about people, and they don't give a crap about Scott Cam.
Well, if ever there was a week where it would have been nice to have the rights to the Jaws theme tune, then this was the week. Remember to follow Medialand on the ABC Listen app.
And make sure you've marked this Saturday and Sunday in your diaries. Radio National will be counting down your top 100 books from 1 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time each day. It's a big job, and lots of your favourite presenters will be getting stuck into the list that you voted for.
Thank you to our producer, Rob Kelly. We'll catch you the same time next week in your feeds and on Radio National.
See you, Tim.
Toodle pip, Viv.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.